It's July 20th, 1983. This is Joanne Mulcahy, and I'm in Kodiak, Alaska, talking with Sophia Simeone. I guess Sophie don't you can begin with where you were born, what year that was?
I was born and raised at St. Michael's. It's a small island very close to the mainland on the northern side of the area, right at the head of the Mouth of Yukon.
That was December 14th?
December 14th, 1929. Mm-hmm.
What are some of your impressions from your early memories of being a child? And what was the village like?
A long time ago, it was a Russian settlement, and then there's a small hill about 5 miles away, maybe less than that. They called it the Russian Garden because the Russians had a garden there. When I was growing up, you could see the old green road cracks. I don't know if they had any trains or not, but it was used for maybe for cars.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. And I saw old pictures with my adopted parents had taken when they were young. But St. Mike's was like living along before I was born. The tall houses, tall old houses.
Mm-hmm. What, do you remember what they were like?
They were made out of lumber.
Mm-hmm.
One of us got lumber. And I think that was during the gold rush days too, you know, the people coming in from the Yukon, coming in on the steamboats in the back of them, they had wheels.
Mm-hmm.
I seen those old steamboats when I was growing up, but they were not in use then. I was 7 or 8 years old. All barges there. And I was in front of those. It was quite a town. No, I don't. Then gradually started dying down. There was no more big things going on anymore. We were like jobs.
After that, during the golden period?
Yeah.
When do you remember when you were adopted again?
I was 9 months old.
Mm-hmm.
I was 9 months old when I was born. When I got to be old and when I got old enough to understand, my adopted parents told me, especially my adopted mother told me that I was adopted when I was 9 months old from my original parents.
Mm-hmm.
And my real sisters, they were born and raised at St. Michael's too, I think. I don't know. I don't know too much about the background where they were raised, originally where they were born, but they lived at St. Michael's from the time I can remember. We all got married because we had it all over Alaska.
Dad was all over Alaska. What was your father and mother's name? Your parents?
My real father's name was Daniel. Daniel Boucher. My real mother's name is Lucy.
Mm-hmm.
My adopted parents were Alex Johnson and Lori Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
I was raised as Johnson.
And did you ever meet your grandmother?
I saw her only once. The last time I was at home. This is my own adopted father, after my adopted mother passed away.
Your mother was in St. Michael's?
Mm-hmm. Didn't even have very much chance to talk to her. I didn't know how to approach her.
Mm-hmm.
She was quiet, I hardly talk.
Did she go back? You said that she had gone to Portland,
mm-hmm.
to the hospital.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she was there for a long time.
Did she go back to St. Michael's to settle?
Yes, she's still there.
She's still there?
She's still there, from what I understood.
in your adoptive family, Sophie, how many brothers and sisters did you have?
My adoptive brothers, they didn't have no sisters.
Mm-hmm.
There were no sisters. I've only known three. They had four sons. The youngest son I have never met.
Mm-hmm.
I think I was just a baby when he passed away, so I only got to know the three of them. That's all. He's the oldest. And Harry is the second. And Franklin is the third one.
Mm-hmm.
I was closer to Harry than Axel and Franklin because they did a lot of traveling.
What
my adopted father had taught them how to be mechanics like he liked him when they were growing up because
mm-hmm.
he was an engineer on a mail boat.
Mm-hmm.
On a mail boat, and when they got old enough, he took them along with him and, you know,
mm-hmm.
let him watch what he was doing, explaining to the brothers, you know, how the engine runs and all
mm-hmm.
the parts of it, what makes it run, what kind of fuel to use, all that good stuff.
So your father was a mechanic. What about your memories of your mother? What kind of things did you do with her when you were growing up?
My adopted mother?
Yeah.
There were a lot of things. I remember I did with her. She took me out berry picking, took me out muskrat hunting, out camping for berries.
Your mother
taught
you how to hunt?
Yes. I have to set a trap for a muskrat and how to use the 22, mm-hmm. the little 22 gun. And there's two different shells you use, the 22 short or the 22 long.
Mm-hmm.
But mine was a 22 short shell. And the handle was, it was made just to, you know, just right for me, not too big, right, big right there.
How old were you when you did this?
Mm-hmm. I was about 11 years old, 11, 12 years old.
Did you like it?
I liked it. And we'd go out egg hunting in the spring and pick all the wild greens.
Egg hunting?
Mm-hmm. Wild ducks, you know, like all the ducks. Ptarmigan eggs, seagull eggs.
Mm-hmm. Where did you find the eggs?
Out in the tundra,
mm-hmm.
out in the canal one. The crane has it. The crane lays one big egg.
One?
Just one.
Yeah.
Like in the nest to me it was more or less like mud. And the geese eggs, you go to the nest, you will look inside the nest, you'll think there's no eggs because it's, you know, there's a down on top with grass, with straw,
mm-hmm.
pine straw. Another straw you're looking through, you think it's empty, but you pull that up, there's the geese eggs in there. The eider ducks, you really have to look for them. They lay their eggs in tall grasses,
mm-hmm.
you know, in tall grass close to the lake sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
You have to really look. And the ptarmigan eggs, they lay lots of eggs, 10 to a dozen or more, and they're small.
Mm-hmm.
You have pretty specks on them.
Do they taste a lot different?
They taste okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they taste okay. I don't like them fried, I like them boiled.
Mm-hmm.
And I like them in, you know, egg hot cakes. Since it needs flour and hot to go with it. Not too much flour, just hold enough, you know. Not too soft of a dough. Not too soft and not too stiff, just fried. And fried in a deep pot.
Mm. What other things did you eat growing up?
Dried salmon, dried herring, dried tom cods, salted salmon, smoked salmon, dried seal meat, and fresh ones that you boil, make your seal oil. And your wild greens.
Wild greens?
Mm-hmm, wild greens. There's greens that you can pick from the beach.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a wild parsley. There's wild rhubarb.
Mm-hmm.
Wild celery. And I forgot the kinds. I don't know the English names too. Those you find from the side of the mountains too, and wild spinach. You got your blueberries, your blackberries, your cranberries. And back home we call it the salmon berries, you know, but some people call it clog berries. They're orange and some are red. I think it's orange and they're really ripe. Very tasty. And the sour docks you cook, you can cook your sour docks with the beach greens, and then you can, the stem of the sour docks, you don't have to cook, chop them up good and mix it up together. Before berry picking time, you put that in a barrel. Keep it in a cool, dark place, cover it good. And then you can pick your blackberries and blueberries and mix right into that. It's very tasty. It has a little bit kind of a tart taste to it. You could, you know, add sugar and milk if you want to, or add a little sugar and cereal if you want to, or make blend it in with your Eskimo ice cream.
Eskimo ice cream is
that? Like a duck. It's made. Your Eskimo ice cream is made with the reindeer fat. You dry the fat. You can dry the fat. It takes a little while to dry. And after it's dried, you know, for winter time, then you cut it up real small, put it in a frying pan, soften it up, make it to right, you know, the right how you cry it. Yeah. And you put it in a pan, you wash your hands good. You have your berries all ready. You have your cereal all ready, your little water ready, and your sugar ready. And you quick pick with your hands, quick. The more little cereal you put, the little water you put in, the more it gets. You could use only small amount and it gets bigger and bigger. Just like you would bake an egg white, it gets bigger and bigger.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like that. Mm-hmm. And you add your sugar a little bit at a time. And to give it a color, you could throw your berries in there, squeeze your berries, and it gives it a nice pinkish color or blue, you know, purplish color, whatever color. Then you add your berries. You could add your berries a little bit at a time. Maybe your black and blue berries here, maybe your hard berries mixed with black berries here, maybe wild strawberries with some kind of a, maybe blueberries, you know, and then the white part. Then you let it cool, and then set it up where it's cold. You could keep that for days, maybe when it's frozen. And the pussy willows too, we used to eat the pussy willow leaves when they're just starting to grow. While they're really young and, you know, tender before they start getting that hard fiber in the center. You have to pick lots of it. And you have to pick a lot of it and you pack it down in clean jars, put just a little cereal in it, and then right on top of it, then you put the about that much of maybe half an inch or so, just push it. We'll always, that's not so, and this way it won't cause it to mildew.
And you can keep it.
And then when it's ready to eat, you could see that. When we go on top, you just take that one off. You don't store those in large, in great pictures, just enough to, that way it wouldn't spoil on you. Start moving. That goes the same way when you put your berries away for winter and your wild greens mixed with berries. You always put the, you know, like your wildflower docks, the leaves, put a good thick layer on top. And the leaves protect that from getting mildewed, you know, before winter begins. When winter begins, you know, then start getting cold, you check on it, it's okay, you know, then you just take the mildew part away, you still have enough there to protect it. And when it starts freezing, you know, that won't happen, because the temperature, the cold temperature, protectiveness. It's really, it really frees us.
Mm-hmm.
You take a knife or a chisel, something like that. Chisel it out when you need it.
Winter must have come around.
Yeah. Growing up here, so we all families, right at the first herring season one, you don't get carp back at my hometown. Everybody's down on the beach. They set their nets out and then they get all the herring they can get. They soften herring, they make dried herring, you can make smoked herring too.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
You have to put a lot of it away. Before that, you have to put a lot of seal oil away. And when your herring gets dried, you pack it down in barrel kegs, 25-pound kegs, or whatever you want. You lay them down neatly, and you always have something hard to press on it, Put little seal oil all the time, like that.
To keep
it? Mm-hmm.
You seal them for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Did it take a lot of seal?
Yeah, but nothing goes to waste. Nothing goes to waste. The hide from the seal, you make clothing out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Like your sealskin mufflers, or sealskin pants, sealskin jackets.
Mm-hmm.
You make things like that. And even the stomach of a seal, you don't throw that away. You clean it out good. Inside and out and blow it, blow it up like a balloon and dry it up, and that's where you can fill it up with your seal oil and your wild grazing berries into that too.
Oh, you fill it like a sack?
Mm-hmm, like a sack.
Mm-hmm.
And it don't spoil.
Is that for, did the women do that? Or
yes,
the men?
The women did that.
Mm-hmm. And did your adopted mother do it too?
Yes. She used to watch her a lot of times. No, nothing goes to waste, not even from a salmon. What you cannot use, you dry it up anyway so your dog teams could have food for winter too.
Mm-hmm.
And even when you're filleting a salmon for drying, you don't throw the backbones away because there's still meat there. And you save that too for the dogs. That's mm-hmm. when I first learned how to cook. I was taking care of my brother's dog one summer. And he asked me, I'm old enough now to learn how to cook. And he showed me, he said, just fill it up with water. Put the old dried salmon in there. I'll show you quick and dump everything in. And don't forget to put a little seal oil in there.
Mm-hmm.
Better have a little pot with it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not seal oil, reindeer pot
mm-hmm.
or tallow. Put in.
Tallow?
Mm-hmm. Tallow, it's a dried fat.
Mm-hmm.
Dried fat. And in the summer, you tell me, only once a day you cook for the dogs, and you feed them only in the evening.
Mm-hmm.
But during the day, you give them water.
Mm-hmm. Do they use dogs now?
Yeah.
When they're growing up?
Mm-hmm. They use them for traveling, maybe going from village to village. They use them for out hunting.
Mm-hmm.
They use them for many things. Those dogs, they work hard. Go out mm-hmm. and get wood, You have to treat the dogs good. Feed them good.
Do they have any kind of they have other kinds of machines and cars and automobiles?
No. Just the airplane.
Mm-hmm.
The first airplane I saw was really afraid.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember how old I was, but I was really afraid.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I was really afraid. And my adoptive father, he has never been in the hospital. He's never been in the hospital. And he's telling me the last time I went to him, he said, he got sick, and I told him, I think I should go get the village health aid and send you on to Bethel Hospital. He said, no.
Mm-hmm.
He'll get well. He did get well.
Mm-hmm.
He did get well. He used to ask me all kinds of questions, what hospitals were like, how they're treated, what the rooms are like, what the food is like, and how the people are. And, you know, I told him, that's where the doctor and the nurses help you get well, but you got to help yourself too, to let them help you get well. Don't be afraid.
Who was the person in the village that helped people with the nurses when they were growing up? Was there a native doctor? Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know. Mom used to take care of sick people.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember that.
She was plant something?
I think so. And we had an epidemic, measles epidemic.
Mm-hmm.
And my doctor father had made blueberry wine, always had blueberry wine at home. And we did have a measles epidemic. And to break the measles out, you know, I remember she gave me 2 tablespoons or more of that blueberry wine.
Mm-hmm.
And that helped.
Mm-hmm.
That helped.
They were midwives in the village. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they were midwives. They were midwives. They also have 3 or more.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And did they have, were they healers at all, or were they just...
I really don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't know. Maybe they might have been. I really don't know. I couldn't tell you. I left home when I was 14 years old to attend the High Mountain Vocational School.
Mm-hmm.
And every summer I'd go home, and then in the fall I'd go back to school.
Mm-hmm.
And the last time I went back to our High Mountain Vocational School, that's the time I took a plane back to from St. Michael's to High Mountain. And I remember my adopted mother told me, she said, I think I have to send a telegram to the principal of the school that you'll be late going back to school. She said, because I'm $1 short and Papa's not here, he's on a trip, and he won't be back till next week or week and a half, depending on the weather.
Mm-hmm.
And I told her, Mom, I think I can solve it out. I told her, there's one favorite record that I like, I'm going to sell. She said, no, you don't do that. I told her, I think I will. I have to go back. I did.
Did you?
I did.
Where did you get the diary?
I sold it down to the store.
The record?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I told the storekeeper that I told my mom that I'm selling it because she was $1 short to send me back to school.
Do you remember what record it was?
Joel Spinning Queen.
The old spinning one?
But I don't know who sang that. I don't know the name of the party who sang that. I didn't pay attention to that. But I like the sound.
Mm-hmm.
I like the tone, but you know the tune?
I don't know.
That was my favorite record. And I think the storekeeper told Mom, you know, and then she got it back.
Mm-hmm. What were you studying in vocation at school?
Eighth grade to ninth grade.
Mm-hmm. They didn't teach you a particular vocation?
Yeah, we were taught skin sewing and beadwork and home ec, and we had chores, work in the kitchen, always alternating kitchen, helping the cooks in the morning, setting the tables, doing the dishes, and then they're always rotating and then working the laundry, you know.
You already probably knew some skin sewing and things from growing up.
Mm-hmm.
Did your mother teach you?
No, she taught me. Mm-hmm. And then there was all of us girls, all of us kids, you know, we all spoke different dialects. But there were some students from as far as Point Barrow and as far as the Yukon. No, not. Nobody from the interior, though. It's more or less from the coastal area, from mm-hmm. what I remember.
What language had you spoken at home growing up?
Yupik. Yupik and Little Yupik.
And so when you went to school, was everything in English?
Yeah, my classroom was in English. But then when after school hours are over, and we all get together and talk. We talk English to each other, then ask each other questions. How do you say them? How do you say this particular word in your dialect?
Mm-hmm.
And then so-and-so would say, you say it the same, that's the same meaning. Then I would say, okay, in my dialect, it's,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's pronounced this way. But the same meaning, like, in English.
When you were growing up at home, did you learn English at home too? Or just
in school?
You didn't learn English until you started school?
Yeah.
Is that a village school?
Yes. That was when it was territorial before it got to be BIA.
Uh-huh.
The first, we had no kindergarten. We went right into first grade. It was hard learning to speak English, learning to understand it. From what I can remember, I never forget to this day. Teacher don't want us to speak our native language to, you know, within the school area, otherwise we get punishment. Like 100 times I will not speak Eskimo in school. And sometimes, you know, growing up, we forget. Growing 1 year ago, I think we start yapping, whispering, and you get caught the day after school.
Yeah. What were the teachers like?
That's the first time I see blue eyes.
Was it?
I couldn't get over my teacher's blue eyes. Mr. Ball. His name was Mr. Ball. Oh, I just couldn't get over his blue eyes. I just stared at his blue eyes. Then finally, I think I recall I asked him, can you see? Your eyes is so pale. Not even ripe like the blueberries. It's too pale. And he told me that he can see that he was born like that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he says to me, you have real dark eyes. Can you see? I said, yeah, I can see. And I didn't say anymore. Like, and I said, but I can't believe it. I have to look and look at your eyes all the time.
It must have looked funny to me. Mm-hmm.
I just couldn't get over his blue eyes. I went home and I called Mommy, my brother, senior. But my brother Franklin, he was very helpful in teaching me how to, you know, help me along and learning how to speak.
Mm-hmm.
I was grateful for that.
There was a story someone told me. I don't know if it was from up north about how the raven that you learned was a story that they learned as a child. Had to do with seasons. Do you remember any stories?
No, not that.
Were there any stories that your mother told you as a child?
I forgot most of it. I forgot too.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know how to do the Eskimo dance, and then the school had a school play, and we were supposed to do the Eskimo dance, but two older girls than I am, and they all didn't know how to do the Eskimo dance, and I didn't know. How to do the Eskimo dance, then I was afraid to think that the teacher said that I might know a little bit about the Eskimo dance because she wanted all of us, try like that.
Oh, that is nice.
Yeah.
You must have been tired.
And I told Mom that we're going to be putting out a play that I need a new prospect, an out of pocket. We're going to do the Eskimo dance. I didn't know. And here I was making different motions, what they were making, pretending I was washing clothes, wringing them, and hanging them.
What is the ASMR dancing?
There's a story in every movement you make, and every sound and every drum beat. The drum beat might sound like it's all the same, but listen close to the tap and the beat and the words, the whisper is said.
Mm-hmm.
So it sounds more or less sometimes monotone.